Saddam Dum.
Well, let me try that again. Dum, da-dum, dum. Oh, that's terrible. Dum, da-dum, dum. That's better. That's better. Dum, da-dum, dum. My friend and I the other night were talking, and he labors here also at this bastion of goodwill and concern, honesty, and nervousness. And the two of us decided that the only thing we really believe in is the devil. That's right. The devil is everywhere. And he's on the stick. He knows what he's doing. And he is making his presence felt. The devil. In fact, I mean, if you've seen pictures recently on the news of Mayor Lindsay being informed that they picked up four more of his cohorts. And he's got that confused look as though, what have they done to me? Well, it's the devil. He's everywhere. And the reason he hasn't gotten to you, friend, is that the devil only deals with those who are worth corrupting. Oh, yeah, why mess around with small fry? This, you know, after all. You'd kind of like to sell your soul, wouldn't you? You're just looking around for, you know, a good buyer. Dum-da-dum-dum. There we go. There we go. Very good. Before we get underway here tonight, it's really scary being an influence, I must say. One of our sponsors... Oh, it is. It's very scary. Some people, of course, are famous, and they get their name in Earl Wilson's column. And then there's the influences. These are the underground influences, like great rising swells on the vast sea of life. And they don't often get in Ed Sullivan's column and on the Smothers Brothers show, you know. But it's very discouraging, and yet at the same time, highly inspiring sometimes to be an influence. For example, one of our spies he informed me he's working out at Gimbel's, out at Roosevelt Field, Long Island. You know, this is just Long Island, you know. He's out there at Roosevelt Field, and he's standing there by his counter trying to look like he's official. He's got a little button, you know. And have you noticed in some of the banks these days, you go in there, the little thing says, call me Irving. Yeah, well, that's the Irving Trust Bank. That little button that says, call me Irving. Another bank has got a button that says, call me Friend. And, yes. Can you imagine a person who is so down the ladder in human relationships that his only friend is at the Chase Manhattan? But I suppose, I mean, that's better than having no friend at all, friends, fellow beer drinkers. And nevertheless, I'm informed by my spy, he's standing next to his counter out at Roosevelt Field today, Gimbel's there, when all of a sudden five kids go trooping by his counter, which happens to be the Silly Notion counter. You know, they sell sequined yo-yos and stuff like that, and this crowd of kids, five kids go trooping by playing Jew's harps and hollering at the top of their lungs, Flick lives! He says they were thrown bodily out of Gimbel's in Roosevelt Field today, and we want to salute those kids, and I'll give you a little real Jew's harp playing. Oh, no, the other one. Come on, that comes on later. That's better. Let's give them some real Jew's harp playing. Bring it up there, big harp. Da-da-da-dee. Okay, all right, that's enough of that. Yeah, did you like that? That's pretty good. Not many of us around, you know. Anyway, this kid called me up, this spy. He says, he says they threw him out. He says, but they went out rampant. And I saw another one here today. Speaking of being a sneaky underground influence, I saw a little Dark Forest Green. That's the BRG. Little green Austin Healey. And this little Austin Healey was whipping up Madison Avenue in the middle of a driving rainstorm today. And this, the rain was battering down on this poor little Austin Healey, little thing, you know. And it was green. And on the side of it, in big yellow letters, all it said was, Excelsior! Hit it! That's it. Bring it up there. Well, you know, it's everywhere. Okay, that's it. Hey, you like the sound of that thing? Yeah, I love it. I'll tell you, the playing the Jew's harp is as much part of the atmosphere. You take out here in the East that the minute a kid hits about 7 or 8 or 9, he gets his first six-string Bobby Dylan-type guitar, right? And he starts singing through his nose about his lost love and about how he's going to bring peace to the world by thinking beautiful thoughts. If only the crummy grown-ups would understand, right? Okay? Well, that's the Eastern influence, you see, and this is their instrument. But the Midwest, almost from infanthood, I would say almost from embryonic budhood, a kid is provided with one of these magnificent stainless steel instruments that goes back over 5,000 years in the recorded musical history of this poor, besotted species man. Did you hear that? Listen. Hear that control? You know, speaking of the folk world out there, well, you know, we're all part of it. No matter how highly intelligent and how sensitive each one of us is, how highly trained and how highly civilized, we are but mere ants in this vast panoply of untapped knowledge and untapped understanding of what is and what could be and what never will be. How do you like that? That's kind of good, isn't it? And you never really know on what side your bread is buttered on, right? Did you see this Skippy peanut butter ad the other night? Yes, you see that on television? They ought to make that illegal. If you ever see any of those peanut butter spots on, they have one peanut butter spot that's in color. That should be illegal. I mean, out for years now, I've been a member of Peanut Butter Anonymous. I mean, I just can't touch peanut butter. It's just impossible. It's like it's a certain kind of alcoholism that some people can't drink. You give them a... I remember hearing the story of a guy who had been on the wagon for over 5 years. A drinker type, you know, an alcoholic. Been on the wagon for 5 years. And one day, he was invited to a banquet. And he went to this banquet and sat down, and they served him the shrimp cocktail, and he got the rubber chicken, and he got the canned peas, and the mashed potatoes, you know, that they make out of that plaster stuff, and, you know, a typical banquet meal. He was sitting there innocently listening to the jabbering, you know, the guys up there giving speeches, and they came around, and they gave him the black coffee, and the waiter says, would you like a dessert? And he says, yes. And the guy says, what do you got? And he says, well, we got this cake. And he says, all right. And so they brought him the cake, and he took one forkful of that cake, one forkful, and his eyeballs spun in opposite directions when he got that forkful of cake began to hit his taste buds. Well, he took another forkful of cake, and the old eyeballs spun in the opposite direction. And every overload relay in his system snapped to attention and popped right out of the circuit. They discovered him 2.5 years later, staggering drunkenly outside of a Franciscan monastery south of Nashville, Tennessee. He'd been on a 2.5 year drunk because that cake contained a tiny soupçon of bad rum. Yes, it was pecan nut rum cake. And that little taste of rum, the demon rum, and he was gone. Well, that is something to think about there, friends.
Don't laugh at it. This is not a sermon I'm giving here. I'm just saying that we are all weak. 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 That is the way I am with peanut butter. Let me tell you, if I go to the A&P and there's the peanut butter counter there, I have to walk 3 counters over to stay away from it. I can't even go near it. I have to walk next to the frozen food there where they got the dead fish and the African lobster tails. That I can walk past. But let me tell you, you're listening to a sinner tonight, friends. A sinner. And I'm a reformed sinner, but not a repentant sinner. Now, that's the worst kind. Maybe it's the opposite way. Maybe I'm a repentant sinner, but I'm not reformed. I can't tell which. But I can tell you this. I can tell you this tonight, on this quiet midweek night, that if somebody crosses my path, I don't even like to think about it. The other night, I'm sitting there, and this crummy color television set is on, and I'm watching this rotten horse movie. You know, the horses keep running back and forth, and there's always a 10-year-old girl who's raising the runt of the litter who turns out to win the Kentucky Derby. You've seen that a million times. Oh, that picture is written over and over. That picture has got as many rewrites. I'll tell you, there's as many retreads on that movie as the lonesome stranger walking into the Silver Dollar in the dusty western town. And Flem Claggett, the evil, you know, Flem, the evil sheep rustler, sits there at that poker table, and his little glinty eyes look up when the lonesome stranger walks in, and you know what's going to happen. Old Flem Claggett and his brother Slag, and his old man Toad, they're going to fight it out with the lonesome stranger before this is out, and that poor schoolmarm from Boston. Oh, well, we know about this. And we also know about that young girl, you know, who's this horse they got down in the barn. They're going to make him into glue, you know. She's such a rotten, crummy little old horse. And she gets down on her knees and says, I want to save him. He's so beautiful. And sure enough, they raise that horse, and he grows out to be this fantastic, magnificent, silver, dark, purple stallion with a gigantic chest and a flowing mane. And Mickey Rooney rides him at the Grand National, if it ain't Elizabeth Taylor, but one of the two rides him, and you know he's going to win. He never comes in 40th in a field of 42. You know he's going to win. Well, there are certain things that are just as predictable that we never talk about. And I'm sitting there, and this horse movie's on. I'm sort of relaxed, and after work you can just sort of let yourself go, and I'm drinking some Diet Pepsi and sitting there, you know. Got this corn cob pipe, and I'm blowing bubbles with it and stuff. And all of a sudden, you're right. Did you hear me tell him on the air there that there's only one thing you and I believe in? The devil exists, right? He is everywhere. Believe me, everywhere. Sometimes he comes on and gives the news. Oh, yeah, don't you think for a minute. Oh, he's everywhere. He can look like Walter Cronkite or Johnny Carson. He can look like a pineapple upside down cake. He can do anything, you know. And I'm sitting there watching this movie, speaking to the devil as his WOR, friends. Yes, sir. Fun city. And let's lure him a little bit there, Herbie. Let's give it the... Come on. Follow me down this primrose path, friends. Happy times, friends. Call for something special in a beer. Oh, yes, sir. When you're going to lay in a special snootful, that means Miller High Life. Nothing can compare with the hearty, robust, deep-down, good, fantastic, unbelievable flavor, the furry flavor of Miller. That's why it's called the champagne of bottle beer. Try a glass soon. Try a barrel soon. Yes, sir. Go all the way. Come on, let's hear it. Miller High Life, pop, pop, Miller, 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 Miller. Miller High Life, yeah. What a commercial. Holy smokes, champagne, a bottle of beer. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee. Let William B. try that. That takes talent, son. I just want to confess to you before I go any further. I'm sitting there watching this show, you know, this TV show, innocently being lulled by this horse and this chick, and, you know, they're going to run it in the Grand National, and Frank Morgan is on the scene, you know, old Colonel Frank Morgan. He's got this white mustache, and he's got this black hat, and the colonel, and that little old runt, and he's going to win the race. And I'm kind of lulled there, and I got my hand there clutching like these talons of the evil that I am. I'm clutching this Diet Pepsi. And all of a sudden, there comes this little house comes on, you know, with the little apartment. It goes da 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 da, and the lights are flicking on and off. And this guy comes on with a little pointed head. And he's, you know, the little guy with a double mint gum. Hey, I can resist that. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't believe my eyes. There's this big slab of bread, you know. And this big gaboon knife comes out. And it's got a gaboon, I'll tell you, and it was color. It's got a gaboon of peanut butter on it. It was obscene. And he goes, wah! He lays it down there, and this voice comes out and says, look at that peanut butter. There I am, my hand clutching this Diet Pepsi. And he lays this stuff on, I'll tell you, and what was even worse, it was chunky style. Oh. Well, you know, I tell you, oh, listen, I don't even want to talk about banana ice cream. That's, I can't even discuss that in rational terms, but about halfway through this commercial, the phone rings. And I rush over and I pick it up. I'm sweating. I'm palsied, see. I'm just about to run out, you know, and run down the street screaming like Ray Milland and knocking out the windows of delis, delicatessens, and stealing the peanut butter and all that stuff. You know, wanted to hock my typewriter and the whole bit. Oh, yeah, I've known people so sickeningly hooked on peanut butter that they hid it in the chandeliers and stuff like that, you know. And so the phone rang, see, and I picked up the phone, and I hear this voice. Oh, hello, is this you, Jim? I says, yeah. Oh, my God, are you watching that channel? Look at that stuff. Oh, and it was another one of my fellow members, Peanut Butter Anonymous. He was calling me for help. And I said to him, calm, be calm. It's all right, it's all right, it's all right, I'm here. If you want me to come over and read to you the Bobbsey twins or something, it's all right, just take it easy, easy. Now get down on your knees. Get down on your knees. There, you're down on your knees, Fred. Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. And I could hear the TV set back, the guy saying the chunky style, blah, blah, blah. I said, get down on your knees, quick. All right, tune to Channel 9. I could tell you for one thing, if it is in color, it ain't in real color. And if it isn't in color, it's a bad movie, so turn to Channel 9 quick. I hear clunk, and then I hear, you know, I can hear Steve Reeves going, blah, blah, blah. I knew we were back home. See, I says, hello, take it easy. Now, are you down on your knees, Fred? And he says, yes. Look deep down into yourself and ask for help. Just say I am a weak person, but I can rise above this. And I heard him slowly. You could just hear him calming down. He says, oh, thank you. I just wanted to know there was another human being out there that was resisting this. I said, it's all right, Fred. It's okay, Fred. Just take it easy. And if you have any more trouble later tonight, just give me a call. And I hung up. I sat there for a minute. The sweat is pouring out of my pores, you know, just bathing. And I could hear that guy's voice. I think it was even Burgess Meredith was doing that commercial, you know. And he's got a sneaky voice. And I heard him say, chunky style, peanut butter. Good, man. I sat there for a long minute. And then I found myself, against my will, staggering down this darkened street, looking for an all-night Smiler's. And I found one. And I staggered in. And there were three other guys staggering in there ahead of me. And I saw what a sickening sight it was. Just at that minute, just before I went in and bought a whole shopping bag, a trunk full of peanut butter style. I stopped. And I says, you are a man of the 20th century. You must be strong. Stop. And I did, friends. I stood up straight and tall. Straight and tall. And those two other besotted peanut butter addicts up ahead of me, one guy couldn't even wait before he could get it to the cash register. He had one hand, he had this greasy dollar bill in his one hand. His other hand had ripped open the top of the peanut butter, and he was mainlining it right there in the Smilers. And I looked at both of them. I says, aren't you ashamed of yourselves? What a sickening sight. There are children in this Smilers. And one man, you could just see, he was embarrassed to face the world. He turned. I could see his shoulders shaking. He was sobbing. I said, what a sickening sight and before children. And I bought myself a diet popsicle, root beer flavor, and a bottle of diet Yoo-Hoo. And I paid for it and I left. It was a near miss, though, friends. I want to tell you it was a near miss. A near miss. And I want to say to all of you out there who are sinners, you can pull yourselves up by your bootstraps. I know people, listen, I tell you, I know people who cannot pass the Sara Lee counter. Listen, I know one of the most sickening cases of a person for over 3 years has been hooked lock, stock, and barrel the whole way. Sinker, bobber, line, pole, and all. That crummy Sara Lee cheesecake, that cream cheesecake, it's a sickening sight. Given up his family, this whole scene, now living in this hovel outside of Miami Beach, living in an old 38 Pontiac. It's in the weeds. A sickening hulk of what used to be a man. Oh, yeah. Didn't think you'd get this tonight, did you, friends? This type of sermon, did you? Well, there are a lot of things in that wind out there. And now, friends, we return to the text now. For just one moment, please. We have a note here from Rosetta. Rosetta. You must say it with the right tone. Rosetta. My Rosetta. And if you want some psychedelic light play in your poor little miserable dingy life, I would like to suggest Rosetta. They've got black light. They've got psychedelic lights. They've got a clock that's shaped like Mickey Mouse. And it runs off batteries. And every 15 minutes it quacks like a duck. You put that in your kitchen, Dad, and that'll make them stop and think. This is Rosetta. For 30 years, they've had the greatest collection of electrical equipment in this town. If you're going to do anything with electricity, you know, electrify your shrubs. That'll teach that Airedale next door. Build an electric chair. There's a lot of stuff you can do with electricity that maybe you haven't tried. Rosetta, send for their fantastic catalog. Rosetta, W-O-R. And they have three shops. One at 79 Chambers Street. One at 75 West 45, and they have a great new showroom at 73 Murray Street, two blocks west of the City Hall. Strategically placed. Rosetta. What's the matter? Do you notice a certain nuttiness here tonight? This is not... I'm sorry. I'll have to go straight. Let's go straight. Uh-huh. You see, you get carried away by your own vices sometimes. My Rosetta. Now, I'm just trying to get calm, though. My Rosetta. Hey, listen, I got a great story in the current issue of Playboy. Read it. I said read it. I mean, if you can get past that center fold out, read it. And it's called Ollie Hot Noodles, Haven of Bliss. And it's in the July issue of Playboy. And when you read it, immediately write to the editor and say, do away with all that stuff, all them chicks and all that. We want all, nothing more but Shepherd. By the way, we got one guy wrote to Playboy here a couple of months ago. You know, my name is spelled J-E-A-N. It is a French name, friends. It's J-E-A-N. The guy wrote and says, that Gene Shepherd stuff is fantastic. When is she going to have a center fold out? Oh, man. Hey, you know, speaking of the evil that lurks, I have a spy that about every 4 or 5, maybe 6 months, sends me just one missive from out of the darkness there, unsigned. And it always comes from the wildest places in the world. Most generally, the last year, from high in the Rockies. I'm not kidding. And the postmarks are authentic, and this is the real thing. And this guy is far out in the Rockies at this very moment, and this letter just arrived last week. It was written much earlier, and he was in a town where he could not, or in an area where he could not get to mail this letter. Do you want to hear what he says, what's going on out in the real boondocks? Okay, Herb, please. Please. Yes, the purple dust settles on that tired old western town of a lonesome traveler. Comes down out of the purple hills, bearing his worn saddle. Over that old blue work shirt, sweat-stained. Cousin Gene, winter's gone and the ice is going out of the lakes in the high country. I'm quoting the letter. Before I go further, I want you to draw your shades and lock your door. If the sensitive, beautiful people get wind of this letter, I'm sure to lose my B-Tough medal, awarded for my incredible march from the Blarney Stone at 43rd and 7th to the commuter bar on Day Street, virtually unassisted during the big transit strike. My travels during the past winter have resulted in the addition of a number of additions to my file of 50 great moments of truth, as observed out here in the high country. I will record at great risk 2 of them right here for all to see. You see, Shep, I've been over on the West Slope looking over this oil, shale, and uranium business. Someday I'll relate to you the incredible story of Jim Eaches. On my way back, I stopped in this cowboy cafe in Frisco, Colorado. I'm seated in the middle of the dining room. Will you reset that, Herbert? We will need that right now. Now listen to this scene. Are you ready to hear the scene, friends? I am seated in the middle of the dining room. He is in the cowboy cafe in Frisco, Colorado. I'm seated facing the entrance to the dimly lit bar. I'm in the dining room. The bar is separated from the dining area by a wall and a curtain made of strung wooden beads. Beyond the curtain, you can see the purple-red glow of the ever-present country and western jukebox. As the waitress gives me the menu, a half dozen big cowpokes thunder past my table and pour into the bar in a great herd. As I look down at my menu, my eye catches this trail of incredibly huge clumps of mud and frozen earth stretching across the yellow, cracked linoleum floor and leading to the door. I looked round at the checkered white and red tablecloths and immediately sensed that something was about to happen. The waitress brings me a glass of water, and an apparently elderly couple and a young boy come in, take a table to my left against the wall. The man is wearing old, worn-out boots, beat-up jeans with mud on the cuffs, a solid blue flannel shirt with sweat stains around the armpits, and a comparatively new hat, which he does not remove. The man is lean, with a bulging Adam's apple, but the outstanding thing about him has got to be his uncut and broken fingernails. They were incredibly dirty. The woman is wearing laced shoes, a shapeless, wrinkled cotton print dress that appeared to be homemade. Her hair was up in a bun. Her hands are red. Clearly show the effects of years of brutally hard work. From inside the bar, the nasal sounds of Kitty Wells mingles with the verbal succotash of dirty jokes and loud guffaws. It wasn't God who made honky-tonk angels. Plunk, plunk, plunk. Things are picking up. It wasn't God who made honky-tonk angels. The waitress brings my meal, and the man yells to the waitress, "Hey, waitress, you get on over here. Get our orders." "Just a minute, sir." "Hurry up. We ain't got all day." The waitress goes off, and from inside the bar, "It wasn't God who made honky-tonk angels." More Kitty Wells. I finish my meal. The waitress brings some steaks for the couple. I order black coffee and pie. More Kitty Wells. The fifth time. The waitress brings my coffee. The man with the Adam's apple yells for some milk for his kid. Two people walk in and sit down, three tables to my right and slightly behind me. More Kitty Wells. The same record played the seventh time. And then suddenly, from inside the bar, suddenly, a drunken voice. First cowboy. "Hey, what the hell? That damn record get your brain in. Why don't you shut that damn thing off?" Second cowboy. "I'm playing whatever I damn well please. If you don't like it, get the hell out. It's my quarter." First cowpoke. "Buddy, that's the most expensive quarter you got. It is going to cost you the rest of your teeth." Second cowpoke. "Why, you worthless skunk." I immediately look for the door. The counterman picks up the phone, mumbles a few words, sets the phone down. Blam! Someone is literally being knocked through the sheetrock wall. I can't believe it. I sit frozen, fascinated in my seat. The floor shakes with the pounding of boots. Blam! Blam! More shouts. "Poke his eye out. You see that? Hit him again. Get up, you worthless scum. Get up, you. Get up here and fight." Blam! A highway patrolman and a sheriff in a big hat thunder past my table, and seconds later, thunk, the law has arrived. The sheriff has laid his pistol over the head of one of the participants. There is a distinct de-escalation in both the level of combat and the enthusiasm of the spectators. Well, I sit back in my chair and I glance over at the couple and the kid. The man is stuffing his face. He looks up as the sheriff drags the two combatants out of the door, streaming blood, picks his tobacco-stained teeth with his fork, curses at his wife and kid, sticks his nose back down on the plate and continues to shovel peas past his mandible using his tarnished knife. I reach for a steadying belt of coffee, but I notice that the coffee is now dotted with white flecks of ceiling plaster. I sit there for a few moments and watch as the plaster slowly forms a protective coat over the surface of the coffee from the heavy jiggling of the fistfight in the next room. I get up, pay my bill. The waitress apologizes. I pick up a handful of toothpicks and open the door. As I do, the jukebox starts up again, and as I close the door, I can hear the Wilburn brothers singing, "Love your neighbor as yourself, but leave his wife alone." Plunk, 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 whine. As I stood outside, buttoning my jacket against the cold, rising winter wind, I looked past the flickering red neon Coors beer sign, and I could see the man waving his fork at his wife. The woman picks at her food, and on her face is a look of incredible weariness, resignation, and apathy. It has started to rain, and as a pickup truck passes, his headlights shine on a green and white road sign, Frisco, Colorado, elevation 9097. I climb into my rig, and as my six plies sizzle through the late fall Colorado night, I realize a great truth. A great truth. As I go chugging along that long highway next to the railroad tracks, I realize a great truth. A truth so big I can't even put into words. Cousin Gene, I want you to check carefully over your shoulder and under no circumstances let this letter fall into the hands of Norman Mailer or Nat Hentoff. report from the outside world. And a lonesome stranger, covered with dust, walks on his way out of that old western town past the Silver Dollar. He's carrying his saddle low, his old worn quarter house. That old horse limps beside him as they go walking on towards that purple horizon. The sun glowers fitfully, the wind blows, it picks up, and the bones themselves shiver in the old tombstone graveyard on the edge of the hill. You like that?
Oh, man.
Well, listen, I tell you, I think a lot of you people, I envy people who have lived in cocoons all their lives. I really do. I really do. And yet, on the other hand, I feel sorry for them. I remember one night, I'm with my kid brother, and we're in this Jaguar, as they call it in those great wide spaces out there. It's a dark green XK-120, and we are humming through the night, the Kentucky night, and it was a cold, gathering storm kind of night, and all day long it had been hot. And now the chill is on the land, and you can see those hills rising up on all sides of us. And we're booming along in that Jaguar, humming south. He's sitting there beside me, and we're driving along. It is now 10 o'clock at night. We go whipping through one tiny, tattered town after the other. And a great thirst overcame us, a desire to stretch our legs. We rounded a bend, past an old shell station, past a couple of abandoned shacks, and there up ahead is a fitful neon sign that says one thing, beer. It was hanging over the door of a frame house. Not a tavern like you people know. This was not Two Chores. Just a frame house with a porch and a swing. And a couple of sleeping Kentucky dogs. You know, the big blue tick kind. Just sit there and scratch even when they sleep. And we pulled up next to that frame house. And a couple of pickup trucks to our left. And there was an old Dodge to our right. And there was an old battered surplus Jeep pulled up behind us. And we could hear the sound of music coming from out of this frame house. That big red neon sign. And we walked up the porch steps and in through the screen door. And there was what had been the living room. It was now just a bare room. And off to the left was a long wooden counter that had been made out of pine boards, the bar. And there was a guy with a white apron standing behind it, blue jowls. These two little BBs for eyes. And he has a couple of kegs of beer, and he's got an old Coca-Cola cooler, you know, the kind you see in front of the gas stations that you open up the top and the ice floats around. And that's it. A lot of glasses on top of the pine boards. And over to the right here, they'd made a couple of little booths out of three-ply. And there were some chairs sitting up against the wall. And the jukebox is moving out, man. The Delmore twins were hot and heavy. They are laying it out good. Yeah, I remember when we walked in, they were singing Jesus is God's Atom Bomb. Yep, the Delmore twins. You could hear those mandolins a-picking and a-singing and a-hollering. And me and the kid brother walked in. We turned left and headed to the bar. The man with the blue jowls looked up at both of us. Didn't say a word. He was waiting to see what would happen. My brother said, beer. He said, yep. and he drew two steins. We grabbed each one in our right hand, laid down a dollar. He gave us back a half a buck, and we turned and walked over to two kitchen chairs that were painted apple green and sat down facing the center of the floor with our backs to the wall. We noticed in the booth there were about seven heavy-jowled men wearing blue overalls, the kind that cross in the back and say Big Yank. One guy was wearing a straw hat with kitchen matches stuck all around the edge. Another guy was wearing nothing but a crew cut, no shirt under his overalls, just bulging muscles and a tattooed heart on his bicep, with a dagger running right through the middle of it and blood dripping down to his elbow. All seven of them just looked. Long, hard look. And the words were very few and spoken in a soft voice. The Delmore twins swang into their second number. This one, there's smoke on the water. They were singing, there'll be smoke on the water tonight. Oh, there'll be smoke on the water tonight. That big speckled bird will come and sing for us. There'll be smoke on the water tonight. And we sipped our beer, as green as grass and as bitter as the breath of Hades. And there was silence except for the Delmore twins and all seven men with blue jowls watching us. When all of a sudden, from out of the night, came the clump of heavy boots on the porch just outside the door. Clump, 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 boom. The door swung open. And there stood two Kentucky state troopers. Broad-shouldered, lean, slit-eyed, bronzed, carrying their 38s low, with those big flat hats and the high water pants. One walked right over to the two of us. The other stood by the door. He looked down at us for a moment and he said, is that your foreign car out there? My brother said, yeah. I have a brother, by the way, who makes Rocky Marciano look like Wally Cox. He says, yeah. And the trooper says, Jaguar, ain't it? I said, you bet. He said, you know, I got a word of advice. Come out on the porch and I'll give it to you. We got up, put our beers down on the pine table and went out. You know when you're being summoned. The first trooper says, I wouldn't hang around town. Them old boys is looking you over. My brother says, for what? You stick around town long enough and you'll find out for what. They don't like outsiders around here, especially if they drive Jaguar cars. I said, I got you, buddy. He said, I thought you would. 30 seconds later, we are 5 miles out of town, going 120 miles an hour into the night. And we could see the flickering lights of that Kentucky State Trooper's squad car turn left and head up into the Purple Hills. Sometimes you gotta travel on, friends. Sometimes life ain't just the way it is in Magnificent Alexander's up there on Fordham Road. Oh, it's a long, dark, hot country. Yes, sir. The world is not exactly an Eskimo pie bar. It ain't even Raisin Kool-Aid. Sometimes I even doubt whether it's raspberry jello or the Jefferson airplane. It's a lot more than all that, wrapped up in a great big ball of wax. Five kids walking through gimbals at Roosevelt Field, hollering flick lives and playing Jew's harps and getting flung out into the night. Well, maybe they deserved it. That big old trooper says, I thought you'd get the message. And we went on.